As I said, a joy to be here last night. One of the happy moments was getting some time to hang out with Chelsea and Robert. And we were sitting and chatting and watching everybody dance. And Chelsea said, "Now, am I remembering right that you were a pastor, like a real pastor?" I said, "Yeah." And she says, "How long?" I said, 15 years, and her jaw kind of dropped. She goes, How does that happen? Well, this is an example of how it happens. What I'm about to share with you is a selection from Genesis 2, which I grew up believing was inerrant and historically factual. I was a young earth literalist creationist, taught from birth that this was literally true. Even though this is the second creation story in the book of Genesis, and the first one and the second one don't agree, and God creates light before God creates the sun, like, don't get caught up in details. I believed it. So what I'm doing today is taking a story that was part of my childhood and setting it in a new understanding, which is how you move from being a pastor for 15 years to being someone who is happy to be a humanist. This is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created, when the Lord God made the earth and the heavens. Now, no shrub had yet appeared on the earth, unless you read the first creation story and then the shrubs were there, but never mind. Okay. No shrub had yet appeared on the earth, and no plant had yet sprung up, for the Lord God had not yet sent rain on the earth, unless you read the first story. And there was no one to work the ground. Now, we're reading it in English, so we don't get that that's a play on words, but there was no one, no Adama, oh, sorry, no Adam, that's where we get the word Adam. There was no Adam to work the Adama. There was no human to work the hummus. We've got the same overlap, the same play on words in our language too. But streams came up from the earth and watered the whole surface of the ground. And the Lord God formed the Adam from the dust of the Adama and breathed into the Adam's nostrils the breath of life. And the Adam became a living being. The Lord God said, "It's not good for Adam to be alone. I will make a helper suitable." Now the Lord God formed out of the ground all the wild animals and the birds of the sky and brought them to Adam to see what he would name them. And whatever Adam called them, that was its name. So Adam gave animal names to all the livestock and the birds and the wild animals. But for Adam, no suitable helper was found. So the Lord God caused Adam to fall into a deep sleep. And while he was sleeping, he took a chunk from Adam's side and then closed up the place with flesh. And then God made an Isha from the rib, from the piece. And the man, Adam, said, "Now this is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called Isha, for she was taken from Ish." So God created an Adam, and God split the Adam, and created an Ish and an Isha, just like there was an Adam and an Adama. Adam and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame. Can't even tell you the number of times I've read that story. But I've changed a lot since then. And one of the things I've discovered about myself is I don't like people. And I know that sounds arrogant, but it's not that I like myself better than people. I don't like me either. It's not a game anybody wins. If I meet you and you don't immediately like me, well, guess what? I don't like you either. But if you meet me and you like me, well, I know me. And that's kind of suspect. Shakespeare says, what a piece of work is man. How noble in expression. How infinite in faculty. In form and moving, how express and admirable. In action, how like an angel. In apprehension, how like a god. And then I look on YouTube and say, seriously? I look in the mirror and I think, you gotta be kidding me. I spent the better part of my life trying to seem happier than I actually am. Because as you know, I was a paid professional clergy person. And nobody likes a mopey minister. I was fresh out of church, or fresh out of school, working in my first congregation, getting to know what it was like to really serve real people in the real world, and discovering that the people inside the church weren't really so different than the people outside the church. But I took heart because within the church, there were people who were exceptional. And I thought of them as the saints of the church. One of them, a little old lady, who was sweeter than the day is long and kinder than anyone I've known. She came up to me after a sermon. And she said, you know, Rob, some days I have a hard time believing any of this is real. But you stand up there and you preach and you sound so confident. And so because you have faith, I have faith. So no pressure. You're just sharing the most important message in the history of history. You're just preserving a congregation that was born before the Civil War. There's only people's eternal souls at stake, no pressure. Which is why this week right here, was my favorite week of the entire year. Because in church history, this is Palm Sunday. It kicks off Holy Week, when Christians the world over remember the last week of the life of Jesus. Now, I know some of you were not as lucky as me to be indoctrinated from birth in these stories. So let me clue you in. It doesn't end well. The church calls this Palm Sunday, remembering the day that the crowds welcomed Jesus into Jerusalem like a conquering hero, waving palms and throwing palms and jackets on the ground so that the hoofs of his animal wouldn't have to touch the ground. 1 week later, he was dead. In 7 days, the crowd turned on him. His followers abandoned him. His closest disciples betrayed him and disowned him. He was tried unfairly, convicted unjustly, punished brutally, whipped, crucified, and buried in somebody else's tomb. In the Christian tradition, that's what this week is about. Easter is coming, and that's the resurrection day and the happy kids and the pretty hats and all the people you haven't seen since Christmas. But this week, this 1 week out of the year, you can't smile and you can't pretend. You have to look the world in the face and see. It is not a fair place. It is not kind. It is not just. And nobody makes it out alive. for 1 week in the year. It was kind of like, let me show you. If you're willing, it'll only take a moment, promise. Nobody gets hurt. Just for a moment, pause where you are. Shut your eyes. And don't move, just sit with your eyes shut and feel yourself as you are. From the top of your head to the soles of your feet, just feel what you currently are. Now relax your jaw and breathe and relax your jaw and breathe. Did you feel it? Go ahead and open your eyes. That unexpected release of tension that you carry with you so constantly you don't even know it's there. That surprising relaxation that predictably catches you by surprise. That's what this week was like for me. On Friday, we remembered the crucifixion. The service started out in daylight, all the lights on, all the candles lit, the choir and the congregation. But after each reading, a candle would be snuffed and the lights would dim as we remembered his walk through trial and torture. The room got darker and darker and darker until we read the story of his death, how they closed the tomb and sealed it with a boulder. And it was my job to walk up to the altar, pick up the giant communal Bible and slam it on the altar to represent the sound of the tomb crashing shut, sealing hope inside. And we would depart in darkness and in silence because hope was dead. The promise of redemption had been broken. The long-sought Messiah was done. And for one night, it was perfectly appropriate to weep. Then Saturday would come, and with it, Easter Vigil, and that service worked in reverse. We would enter in darkness and silence, but instead of the resurrection story, we would reread the story from Genesis, the story of creation. And each day, another candle would be lit, another song sung, and the lights would rise, and the lights would rise until on the seventh day of creation, the congregation would stand and the choir would sing, and every light in the house would burn bright as day. A new day would dawn, even if you couldn't see it yet, even if it hurt. A new world was just around the corner. If you could just hold on. Nobody knows who wrote that service, which was, I think, what they intended. But whoever they were, they understood how people work. Because if you tell me a thing is true, I'm going to say, yeah. Are you sure? How sure are you? And what's in it for you? And the more sure and certain you are, the more I'll wonder whether you're full of shit. But if you spin a story of light and dark and hope and loss, if you make me feel something and I recognize myself in that story, I might just remember your words 1,000 years after you're dead. That person understood how people work. In the first story of creation, God speaks the world into existence one day at a time, but the second one is different. The world's already created. But there's no Adam to care for the Adama, so it's empty. and boring. So God creates an Adam out of the Adama. He makes a dirt person. And then he splits the dirt person into Ish and Isha, a man and a woman. It's not about power. It's about partnership. Adam and the Adama, Ish and Isha. But that's not even my favorite creation story. My favorite is from Plato. Plato tells the story, getting out, hanging with his buds at the Athenaeum with Aristophanes, father of modern comedy. Well, not father of ancient comedy. And their goal that day was to expound upon the virtues of love. So, of course, they're giving their philosophical treatises. And, you know, one's a general, so he's talking about love is strong and powerful. And one's a philosopher, so he's spinning the philosophical tales. And one's a cynic, so he's being snarky. And it gets to Aristophanes, and he's a comic playwright. So he does what comic playwrights do. He tells a funny, silly story. He says, once upon a time, humanity was round as beach balls. We did not look the way we look today. We had four arms, we had four legs, we had two heads, and we were unstoppable. You could not sneak up on us because we had two heads facing both ways. We had no back. You couldn't fight with us. We had four arms. You couldn't run from us. We had four legs. And if you had four legs, we could cartwheel. We were faster than anybody. And so we did what humans do. We got a little cocky. We got a little arrogant. And we offended the gods. And then Zeus did what Zeus does, which is get a little petty. And he sent Hephaestus, the son of the forge god, to split us in half, which is why now we only have two arms and two legs and one head. And he said, now you watch out. Don't get too arrogant or I'll come down and I'll do it again. You'll have to hop everywhere with half a brain. Which is not the point of the story. Because remember, it was about love. It's not about vengeance. Aristophanes says, back then there weren't two genders. There were three. They're the ones that were super masculine, who identified with the sun. There were the ones that were super feminine, who identified with the earth. And then there were the in-betweeners, who identified with the moon. And when Hephaestus split us down the middle, and we went searching for our other halves, well, you still see it today, don't you? There are men out there looking for the other half of their manly man. And there are women out there looking for the other half of their feminine woman. And then there are a whole bunch of middlers going man and wife, man and wife, man and wife. Why didn't I hear that story when I was 8? It's not a bad story. It's not historically accurate. But is it meant to be? Comedy doesn't have to be true to be funny. It doesn't have to be history to be true. And it doesn't have to be true in all ways, for always, in order to be helpful. When the world feels especially hateful to me, I remember that we are all stardust. We're just mud. Somehow, amazingly, beautifully, temporarily awake. And placing myself inside that story gives me everything I need. When I am lucky, I sing and I dance and I feel no shame. When life is unfair, I rage defiance and I feel no shame. And when I do feel ashamed because it really was my fault and I really should have known better, I don't end myself. Because the end will come soon enough. We're just mud. Today, I remember I am beautiful mud. Or to put it another way, damn, we make this mud look good. And that's enough. Thank you.